This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
By referencing military action, it is potentially riling up the respective publics and therefore potentially backing the respective leaders into a corner where they cannot negotiate, where they can't come up with any compromise. And this could inadvertently lead to more escalation and some sort of conflict.
That's Joseph Siegel, director of the Africa Center for Strategic Studies on how tension with Egypt over Ethiopia's massive dam project are raising concerns about possible conflict. Details coming up. Also, because of COVID-19 spiking, Zimbabwe reconsiders reopening schools. And the World Health Organization says the latest Ebola outbreak in the DRC continues to grow. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Waiting for another African negotiation effort on Ethiopia filling and operating its massive dam project on the Nile, Egypt didn't threaten a military response, but Ethiopian media are rallying people for a possible defense amid concerns that the increasingly contentious project could spark conflict. Egypt said failing to reach a binding agreement on Africa's largest hydroelectric project would pose an existential threat to the livelihood of its people who rely on the Nile's water, and popular pressure is mounting for President Sisi to take action. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about the rising tensions between Egypt and Ethiopia.
Well, I think any reference to resolution through military action is unhelpful and unnecessary, and it does escalate tensions. And so I think all sides need to refrain from making those references, which I should say, you know, are largely, I believe, intended as posturing, as intended to show the resolve of each side that this is a really important issue of national interest and they're committed to finding a solution. However, by referencing military action, it is potentially riling up the respective publics and therefore potentially backing the respective leaders into a corner where they cannot negotiate, where they can't come up with any compromise. And this could inadvertently lead to more escalation and some sort of conflict. So I think in the interest of all parties, they want to avoid any threat or suggestion that they may resort to military force.
But failing to reach a binding agreement on filling and operating the Ethiopian dam is making people feel that this poses an existential threat to the livelihood of the Egyptians. Would the popular pressure force Egyptian President Sisi to take a military action at the end?
Again, I think here is where each of the leaders needs to manage expectations and manage communications with their publics, because if the dispute is perceived as a zero-sum gain and an existential issue, then of course citizens are going to be alarmed and are going to put more pressure on the leaders to resolve this in a manner that's favorable to themselves. I don't think that's helpful in that this is going to have to be a shared resource. There's going to have to be compromise. And as a result, it would be more helpful for all leaders to be talking to their publics about how they can benefit from this, some sort of shared and cooperative agreement. In that way, it isn't seen as such an existential issue, and they can be looking at ways that they can compromise while still protecting their vital interest. And I think this dam provides the opportunity for all sides to win from a successful operation of the dam. So it's a matter of the leaders now using their diplomatic skills, their leadership skills, to convey to the public of what this sort of cooperation is going to look like and how it's going to benefit the broader public.
But does the political crisis in Ethiopia force an Ethiopian tougher position in the negotiations?
I think the recent political instability in Ethiopia does make it more difficult for Prime Minister Abiy to make compromises because he could be perceived as conceding, you know, different elements of Ethiopian sovereignty. And, you know, he is wanting to ensure that he asserts leadership over the country now in this time of crisis. And so he has to manage his domestic constituencies. Let's recall that the dam is, it has become an important element of national identity in Ethiopia, where many millions of citizens have bought bonds to contribute to the funding of the dam. And you know, it's all nationally financed. And so there's a lot of domestic ownership of the dam, a lot of national pride within Ethiopia. And therefore, I think all parties need to realize that, you know, Ethiopia is having to manage those internal tensions as well as trying to reach a mutually beneficial compromise with its partners.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. A spike in COVID-19 cases has forced Zimbabwe's government to reconsider its announcement that schools were reopening. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has the details.
July 28th had been earmarked as the day for schools to resume classes. Information Minister Monica Mutswangwa announced government's reversal Tuesday.
The reopening of schools shall be deferred pending a review of the situation, while the writing of public examinations continues.
Various stakeholders had expressed concern that the government was acting too hastily. Robson Chere is with Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, one of the organizations that opposed the timing.
We welcome the fact that government succumbed to our pressure in terms of postponing the opening of schools due to the lack of the preparedness from the ministry itself in dealing with the COVID-19 related issues. We welcome the move, but at the same time, efforts now should be put in place. All stakeholders should now work together, making sure that the level of preparedness of our institutions in terms of handling or dealing with COVID-19 cases.
He says schools should only open when the World Health Organization declares it safe. Elton Nube is a parent who welcomes the move by government.
I've always been against the issue of opening up schools at a time when our cases are rising, and also at a time when it's quite apparent that our government doesn't have the capacity to protect our teachers as well as learners at institutions of learning.
Nube says even if schools had opened, he was not going to let his children attend classes due to the risks involved. Meanwhile, government has hinted that tighter lockdown restrictions are coming to zero in the most affected places with high infections. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinalashe from Harare.
Among its many economic challenges, Zimbabwe loses hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue because of its porous borders. Adigando gives us more on the story.
The Zimbabwe Revenue Authority says the country's economy is losing hundreds of millions of dollars through smuggling, lax controls and corruption at the country's border posts. Last week, Beitbridge police arrested 35 people suspected of smuggling goods such as petroleum, groceries and electrical gadgets into the country through an illegal crossing point less than 1 kilometer from the main port of entry. The Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, ZIMRA, says police intercepted 22 trucks smuggling in goods worth millions of dollars. Analysts say the revenue leakages probably are much more extensive. They point to a 2019 special audit that showed customs officials were among those involved in a group that smuggled in cars. The report found that close to 500 cars were illegally imported. The Zimbabwe Revenue Authority says it was owed $5 billion in unpaid taxes on auto sales last year. ZIMRA says despite its best efforts, it lacks the resources to control smuggling. Some economists call for enhanced border patrols, digitization of records, and lifestyle audits of customs and tax officials to curtail smuggling. Transparency International in Zimbabwe says its own findings reveal something more pervasive. Muchaneta Mndopa is the country director for the International Anti-Corruption Organization.
Reasons for corruption within the tax administration ranged from the high cost of compliance in cases where one wants to do the right thing and pay their taxes. What we found out was that corruption has negatively impacted on the government's ability to mobilize taxes. And high cost of compliance does not necessarily refer to monetary value only, but as well as the time taken when one wants to pay their taxes. For example, the amount one spends at the border post.
Mndopa says that as the government bemoans lost revenues from tax evasion and avoidance, it should consider the large tax breaks given to multinational corporations.
The failure of the state to tax multinational corporations. What this has done, it has shifted the tax burden to other economic agents on the basis of convenience, further increasing the tax burden on ordinary citizens. This has been made worse by the fact that tax compliance by the multinational corporations and other businesses is currently pegged at 30%.
Some analysts say that while commercial activities account for the bulk of lost tax revenue, corruption compounds the loss of resources. They say the government's excessive taxation system encourages more people to evade their taxes, and that a lack of political will to curb smuggling has led to goods such as onions being imported from as far afield as Natal province in South Africa, even though thousands of Zimbabwean farmers grow the crop. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The World Health Organization says the latest Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo continues to grow, causing major concerns that WHO and partners face critical funding gaps due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This DRC's 11th Ebola outbreak was declared on June 1st in the Equator province area. Since then, it has spread to 6 health zones with 56 recorded cases. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matsidiso Moeti, says responding to Ebola in the midst of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic is complex, but it should not let the coronavirus distract the organization from tackling other pressing health threats. A WHO statement says it has mobilized $1.75 million so far, but that it will last for only a few more weeks. After a barrage of Instagram posts accusing a former college student of harassing or raping as many as 100 women and girls led to the arrest of Ahmed Bassam Zaki, social media in Egypt is exploding with voices echoing the hashtag MeToo movement in other countries, and sexual harassment laws are being amended. VOA's Heather Murdoch has this report from Istanbul with Hamda El Rassam in Cairo.
It started with an Instagram account, Assault Police, which picked up almost 165,000 followers in less than 2 weeks. On it, about 100 women and girls claimed to have been harassed, sexually assaulted, or raped by Ahmed Bassam Zaki, a college student, formerly of the prestigious American University in Cairo. Egypt has long struggled with sexual harassment, with one United Nations study showing that nearly all Egyptian women say at some point they have been victims. But 25-year-old Maya Mahmoud says most women don't report assaults or harassment, fearing retaliation or stigma. But this case is different. After the women and girls spoke up, Zaki was arrested, and prosecutors say he will be held for investigation into 6 separate incidents until late next week. Zaki's family has said very little, but his father did tell one reporter that he thinks the charges are false and that this is an internet pylon. But more accounts keep popping up, with users posting accusations against other alleged sexual abusers in what some commentators are calling Egypt's Me Too movement. Heba Adel of the Egyptian Female Lawyers Initiative says it's too soon to say how this case will turn out, but it's proving the power of social media in influencing the government. Besides quickly arresting the accused, Egyptian lawmakers have adopted a bill that says victims' names must be withheld from public documents to protect them from threats after they make an accusation. Lawyers say this will encourage more victims to report, but there is still a lot more to do. This is lawyer Karim Azat. He says Egypt needs a separate department to take care of cases that involve violence against women, including rape, harassment, and domestic violence. Prosecutors say Zaki has confessed to blackmailing women and girls, but denies all other charges. Heather Murdoch, VOA News in Istanbul, with Hamada Al-Rassam in Cairo.
Zinzi Mandela, the daughter of Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela, was buried in a private funeral today. Zinzi, who died Monday at age 59, was South Africa's ambassador to Denmark. The French news agency AFP, quoting a family member, says she has tested positive for COVID-19 on the day she died. President Cyril Ramaphosa has thanked the Mandela family for sharing the cause of death with the nation, saying it will encourage acceptance of the disease, which some have downplayed or disregarded despite a rising caseload and death toll. South Africa is now the world's sixth most affected country, with 324,221 cases, including 4,669 deaths. South Africans' restrictive COVID-19 regulations have come under fire, with some businesses blaming them for massive job losses and economic decline. With cases spiking, the government has reinstated bans on alcohol sales, leisure bookings in hotels and visits to tourist attractions, limited restaurants to 50 people at a time, and imposed a nighttime curfew. As Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, thousands of jobs have already been lost.
Bars and pubs under lock and key and deserted tourist resort centers. This is the stark reality across South Africa as a result of the restrictions aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19. Although many businesses have been allowed to operate under the current lockdown level 3, the government has been criticized for what some claim are irrational and unfair measures. The tobacco industry is in the courts trying to force the government to lift the ban on tobacco sales. Hardly a month after alcohol sales were permitted, the government this week restored the ban, leaving industry players very angry. Lorian Venter is the director at One Day Only, an online alcohol sales service.
It's an absolute mad scramble and it's an administrative nightmare, very, very difficult. I know, for example, many of our beer suppliers have been brewing like crazy over the last while, and once again, they're going to have to dump their stock. I know the wine farms have been bottling, they've been labeling, they've been getting everything ready to get things delivered. Now all of their cash flow is tied up in that, and actually they're going to need it for staff.
Tourism is frustrated too. Popular destinations have been closed for close to 4 months. Hotels and lodges are still prohibited from booking leisure visitors. This has left Chifiwa Chivengwa, CEO of Tourism Business Council of South Africa, very upset.
It's not only upsetting, but it's frustrating for our industry. And I wonder if it's rational enough to say someone cannot stay in a hotel just because they're not staying for business or essential services. We've got many businesses, resorts and game lodges where people can go there and they can be able to social distance and they can be able to stay far away from crowds. What's so wrong about that?
Complicating things further, power utility Eskom is failing to consistently supply power to the businesses that have been allowed to reopen. Lavan Gopal, director at Africa Merchant, says the damage to the economy will be irreparable.
We have businesses that have closed and jobs that have been lost, and it will take a very long time, if ever, for those businesses to return to profitability. Many restaurants, food chains, etc., may be forced to close indefinitely.
The government says it is aware that some restrictions will hurt the economy, but for now, it has chosen to save lives over livelihoods. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Police in Uganda used tear gas today to disperse members of the opposition People Power movement who had gathered at the party's headquarters. Police were monitoring the situation until candidates for next year's election walked in and the supporters began singing and chanting party songs and slogans. Police then moved in and began firing tear gas. Police have in the last weeks been criticized for cracking down on all opposition functions and arresting its members while letting backers of the ruling party carry on. But a police spokesperson says the opposition members defied directives to control the spread of COVID-19, which banned campaign rallies and called for social distancing. Botswana says it expects results next week from tests to determine what caused the deaths of at least 281 elephants, with fears that the death toll may be higher. The South African nation has sent samples to five countries, including the United Kingdom and the United States, after the elephants were found dead in the Okavango Delta Panhandle. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
The Botswana government has sent further samples abroad, this time to the United Kingdom. Other samples have been sent to laboratories in Canada, South Africa, United States and Zimbabwe. Poaching was ruled out as the cause of death, as the carcasses were found intact. Habron authorities have received test results from Zimbabwe. But Utwezi Kobodo, the Wildlife Ministry's permanent secretary, says findings will only be made public after results come in from other countries.
Just to increase our confidence level, we need to have another set of results that will corroborate what we have received, so that we can rest assured that whatever we are communicating to the public has been properly verified scientifically.
Botswana had been criticized for slow progress in investigating the deaths. Authorities cited the COVID-19 restrictions for delays in sending out samples. But recent efforts to speed up the process have been praised by local conservationist Neil Feed.
It's really good that they're actually now becoming a bit more transparent with where they've sent and what they're actually looking for from each of the places. It's a good thing that they're spreading it wide to try and get the best results for it.
No fresh carcasses have been reported since last week. The government has begun removing tusks from the dead animals, although authorities say some areas in the delta remain inaccessible by road. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.